my left is Ron Reimer. And Ron, I know from the Marriage Builders class at Grace Community Church, where I have privilege to be serving as elder. Ron is the chief physical therapist for a sports center, for the Center for Sports Rehabilitation. And he's going to have a lot of interesting things to share today. Jim Ott, sitting in the middle, is a registered nurse, operates with a mobile unit, and that means he deals with ambulance patients. And Jim has the reputation for helping patch people up in the emergency room, and then going and finding where they are in their hospital room later on, and making sure that they know about Christ. Dr. Felix Martin Del Campo is an outstanding dentist, also a Bible teacher, also an evangelist. He's my dentist, and for which I'm very thankful. So he has to look in my mouth once in a while, which is not one of the great things he gets to do. But Felix is just leading people to Christ all the time. He's already done one this morning. I'm sure he'll tell you about that on the way over here. At least I would encourage you to, Felix, as it would come to that point. So let's begin with Dr. Felix Martin Del Campo, a dentist from Visalia.
Can you hear pretty good? Is that okay? Well, you know, the let's see, this summer I was with these friends of mine, and they were they're in the ministry, and they said, "Oh, you know, our daughter's going out with this guy, and he goes to Christian college." And they were a little, they said, "Well, we're a little disappointed. You know, we were hoping that she would go out with somebody and get kind of serious with somebody that was in the ministry, you know." And I said, "Well, what's his major?" And she said, "Well, he's a business major." And, you know, I kind of was offended because she's separating, you know, some people tend to think that you have to be a full-time position in a church or something like that to be in the ministry. And I just think that the biblical view is that when we're called to become Christians, and that's our, we're called to the ministry there, and then whatever we do, that's just part of the ministry. And so that's how I see it, and I'd like to kind of break up that concept that these people had, and they're trying to make a distinction from being in the ministry and then regular people, you know what I mean? So I just feel that whatever we do, that's just part of the ministry. We're Christians first, and our job just happens to be something we do for a living. But the main goal is to glorify the Lord. So anyway, my background is that I was raised in Visalia, and I went to high school there. And, you know, as a young person at 17, I remember one night just kind of really dedicating my life to the Lord. And I just said, "Well, whatever I do, I just want to give my life to the Lord and just do whatever I can for people and help." You know, it's the same thing we all did as Christians if we were raised in the church. I think we did. And the only thing different is that I just have tried to follow through on that. And so in the work that I do as a dentist, I am able to help people out. And I just take it seriously, take the Bible seriously and do what it says. You know, somebody said, my brother was giving me a bad time the other day. He's a physician in town. And he said, "Well, this lady said you didn't charge her." And I said, "Well, she's a widow. I mean, what does the Bible say to do for a widow? You know, take care of them." So I said, "She's a believer and she's a widow." So I, in that particular case, you know, I just did what the Bible said. So in that position that I'm in, I'm able to witness in that sense and just do what the Bible says. And then, like Bob said, it's kind of nice to have an audience that can't talk back. There's many times when I'm able to witness the people in the chair, and they just can't do much about it. Especially when you're giving them that injection, you know, you just, would you like to hear a story. You know, they just, it's hard to refuse. But anyway, that's how I view my work, that it's just part of my ministry, and we're just here to serve God and to glorify Him. So, in everything that we do, we try to do that. As far as the work itself goes, we try to do a good job. Again, and our motivation is because the Bible says to do it as unto the Lord. So we're, you know, in our work, we're just constantly trying to improve and do things right the best that we can. And as a result of that, I teach at UCLA in the dental school for the graduate students once a month. So by building up your reputation and that type of thing, then you can get the, you have the reputation to get the ear from these people. When I go give lectures around the state and on the west side of the country here, and it's a lunch break, you'd be surprised when you're on that lecture circuit, all these people come around and they're sitting there with a pencil and paper, and anything you say, they're writing down. You tell them you use a certain kind of drill, they all want to buy that one. They see the work on the slides and they want to reproduce it. So that's the reason why we do the good work. We do the good work so we can get everybody's attention, the people in the profession. Once you've done that, now you have the ear so that you can tell them about the Lord. See, and of course that principle applies to anything you do. And anyway, like I said, when you're on the lecture circuit and doing that kind of thing, when you have them at lunchtime, they're open. And then you have the opportunity to share with them. I just was telling Bob on the way up, I took a cab from Westwood over here and the fellows from Iran. But by the time we got to Grace Church, he said the prayer and he broke down and started crying and he accepted the Lord. So you might keep this fellow in mind. His name was Albert. I couldn't even pronounce his last name, but he said he lived in the valley and he promised me he would go to Grace Church to check it out. So, and I told Bob the last time I came to the Master's College by cab, that fellow, he accepted the Lord also. So I should start taking the cab more often. But anyway, that's my 12 minutes up. Oh, I still have time? Okay. Okay. My background was that I just went to the local high school up in Visalia, and from there I went straight to USC. And I did my undergraduate there. And then after the 3 years, I completed the four and the three. And then I went on to UCLA and did my 4 years of dental school at UCLA. So in my last couple of years, I was able to go to Talbot at night and work on the my program there for an MDiv. So that's where I got some of my backgrounds. And that and during the 4 years of dental school, that's when I first started going to Grace Church. So, you know that I got some good background material there. That's the only place you go where you start dental school, a 4-year program, and John's starting the book of Acts, and you graduate, and he's finishing the book of Acts. That's amazing. Then you have a baby, and he's starting the book of Acts. I mean, Matthew, and the baby's 7, and he's just finishing up. That's amazing. So that's pretty thorough. So I think that's about all. You could have questions and things. I'll answer those later. I did spend a year at UCLA on the admissions board, so I kind of understand how that system works there. So if people have any questions about that later, I'll be happy to answer those questions. So.
Thank you very much, Felix.
Next is Jim Ott.
A number of people have asked me what I do for a living, and I usually respond by asking if they've ever seen the TV show Emergency. And when they say yes, they say, "I'm Dixie McCall." Only I think my figure might be a little bit better. I'm not sure. I am a mobile intensive care nurse. I work for Los Angeles County USC Medical Center in downtown Los Angeles. What that means I do is when the paramedics are out in the field and they have a patient that they need to make contact with, They radio into me, and they describe the patient to me, and then I radio back to them the treatment plan for the patient. They need IVs or medications or whatever the problem. Patients can be anything from just a mild fall down or a drive-by gun shooting or an overdose or delivered a number of babies by remote control. It's a really fun thing to do. And then they bring the patient to me in the emergency department. LA County USC is a trauma center. It's the busiest trauma center in the country. So, and definitely with the shootings that you've heard about on the TV, it's gotten a lot busier too. I primarily work in the trauma area, working with those patients. I also work with extremely sick medical patients, heart attacks, strokes, what have you. A lot of psychiatric patients as well. And I'll rotate to different areas where we work with some of the more minor patients occasionally. I also work with a lot of people with broken bones, the usual type of emergency fare. It's a real dynamic area to minister for the Lord in, and it's on several different planes too. For the great majority of patients that I deal with, there really isn't time to sit down and do one-on-one care, because you will have 10 patients and two or three of them will have life-threatening problems, and you have to deal with all of them all at once. And so you're frequently running around trying to get IVs together, get people to x-ray, treat people as best as you can. But you can minister them on a very physical need, and with an added touch of kindness, you can really speak to them in a way that at the county hospital, they typically don't get kindness, you know, from any of the staff because we're so busy. You know, there's often no time to do something simple like get a glass of water for a patient. You can't do that, because if you do, the next person stops breathing, and that's bad. Many of the people that we deal with are homeless, and they have no place to go. They come in an incredibly poor physical condition, and they really need their physical needs met. We had a gentleman just recently who'd been sitting. He was paraplegic. He had no function from his waist down. He'd been sitting in his car for the past 30 days, hasn't moved, which means he went to the bathroom in the car, and people had just been passing food to him, and he came in and just an extremely deteriorated condition. And I think that was probably the single most challenging moment of my life, certainly the most smelly moment of my life. And a couple other nurses and I just went in and just did what we could to clean him up. He had quite a few different things growing in him, and we had to remove those. So it's real tough work sometimes. It's real hard work, but it's really rewarding to have him come out and be a person again. Because when you first see them, you say, this person cannot be human. And then you finish cleaning them up, and you say, there's somebody in there, and there's somebody of value. And you kind of do that kind of thing pretty frequently. I think the second level of ministry there, and probably the most dynamic part in terms of ministry, is to the staff you work with. A trauma center is a very high-pressure area. We very often have people dying. When I worked in the major trauma area, two nights ago, and just in my 8 hours in that area, I had two people die, one by shooting, one by heart attack. And when you deal with that kind of stress frequently, it really wears on you. And people appreciate it when you stop and you talk and you get to minister them on a one-on-one level. I've uncovered a few people there who said that they were Christians, and, you know, right now they don't know where they're at. So I spend a lot of time with them, kind of encouraging, getting to know them. One of them, a friend of mine, Gary, and you can really pray for this guy, is undergoing a divorce right now and having a very difficult time at work. And so I've spent a little time trying to get to know him a little bit better, try to build him, encourage him. Turns out he lives in Fullerton, and he knows about Chuck Swindoll's church, and he wants to go down there and start talking to some of the counseling and getting a little bit more help there. Because when you're at work, you can do so much level, but sometimes a large part of the emergency work is referring, you know, other people, getting them to where they can get the kind of care that they need. So he's on a real road to recovery spiritually. Yesterday he finally told me that, yes, he realizes that his problem is spiritual, that it's not, you know, all the difficulties he's going through, but his relationship with the Lord is wrong. And I've had the pleasure of leading a couple of my staff member friends to the Lord over the last several years. And that's really a neat moment. And I think you'll find that when you work in a situation that intense, the people really know who you are and what you believe. If you think your family knows what kind of a Christian you are, the people you work with in a situation like an emergency room truly know what kind of a person you are. There's no way to hide it and have a false spirituality when you deal with those kinds of stresses. Another level of sharing that I have is my personal interest and where my heart calling is, which is to minister to Muslims. I've been working for quite a few years with Muslims, primarily down at USC. But now most of my USC Muslim friends have graduated and gone back to Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, or some of the other countries. So I'm getting to know Muslims where I work. We have a black janitor in my area who's just a regular old American. And I just decided that, you know, not too many of the people get to know janitors. You know, when you're a nurse or doctor, you don't talk to a janitor, you know, as a friend. I decided just randomly to get to know this guy and just to be his friend. And after a while, I looked closely at his name tag, and I said, well, I knew his name was Rudolph. So we've been getting to know each other really well. We're starting to talk, you know, about spiritual things, talking about Salman Rushdie's book quite a bit. That's a real good leader to talk to a Muslim. And I see real good things coming from that. One of the residents that's in training at the medical center is from Gambia. Turns out he's from the Wolof tribe, and he is a Muslim. And I've gotten a chance to get to know him. We're trying to develop a relationship. I live 25 miles from where I work, so I don't live near very many people that I work with. Turns out he lives 5 minutes down the street from where I live, and he also lives that far away. So we're trying to get a friendship going, develop something. And my wife and I are even looking at the possibility, when he goes back to Gambia in about 2 years, we've been toying around with the idea of going with him. If he's got all this medical training to go back, he certainly needs a nurse, you know, who's got that kind of training. And maybe we'll have a chance to do medical ministry in Gambia. So those are the three big ways you have a chance to minister, I think, in emergency medicine. You know, the first is just sharing directly with the patients, which is primarily an emergency meeting physical needs. Two is with your close staff, people you get to know. And then three, there are a lot of people in the hospital, especially when it's Largest County. You can always find somebody to share with. I'd like to close with just an anecdote that the Lord really blessed my heart with, on a way that I never thought my technical skills could be used for the Lord. I was on my way home from work one night about 3 years ago. And as I turned the corner a couple of blocks from the hospital, I saw that there was a car turned over, and there had been a major accident, and there were no ambulances there yet. I'm kind of a cowboy, and I like to stop and help out at those accidents. So I got out, and I found two very, very critically injured boys, about 16, 18 years old, somewhere in that area. One of them was just a little critical. The other one was right on the point of life and death. And he had no airway. He couldn't breathe at all. So I used a few techniques that I'd learned and was able to open up his airway and get him breathing again. About that time, the rescue ambulance came, and it was one of the rescue ambulances I worked with closely, so I knew the guys real well, and we went ahead and stabilized him in the field as best we could, and then we hopped in the ambulance, and I left my car in a very bad area. And we went off to the hospital in an attempt to save his life. And we were sort of successful in that if I didn't stop at the accident, he clearly would have died then and there, and he would not have been able to wait just those few moments till the ambulance got there. In truth, he only lived about 24 hours. He had very severe chest injuries and very severe head injuries. What's neat is when he died, his parents donated most of his organs to other people. And a year later, I read an article in the LA Times that was featuring this particular case because the mother was the director of nurses at another hospital. And the heart was given to a young man who lived in Phoenix. He had a family. He had two small girls, I believe. He was in his low 30s, and without a heart transplant, he would have died. And he said in an open letter to the parents how grateful he was that even though their son died, they were able to give him life. And as a result of this, after he received the heart, he became a born-again Christian and gave his life to the Lord. And so I just thought that was really a neat thing, because just my few skills, just helping to keep him alive, turned out to lead someone else to the Lord that could have died and lived in a Christless eternity without that. And now he knows the Lord.
It's all about how the Lord has prepared those good works for us to walk in when we're ready and willing to do that. Thank you, Jim. Next, we want to hear from Ron Reimer.
My name is Ron Reimer, and I'm the chief physical therapist at the Southern California Orthopedic and Sports Medical Group. And that's a large orthopedic group that basically employs about maybe 200 people or more at this point. I'm the director, the chief physical therapist of the therapy department. And I have a staff of seven physical therapists and two physical therapy assistants and about seven or eight aides or technicians that work with us. And 10 years ago, I would never would have imagined myself being in a position like I am now. I didn't 10 years ago. I didn't even know what I was going to be doing. I was I'm a Northwest native. I went to Seattle Pacific University, where I graduated with a degree in health sciences. I had an emphasis in sports medicine, but really didn't know where I was going to go with that. I knew that I wanted to work with people. I knew that there was certain things that I didn't want to do. I don't have the capacity to sit behind a desk for very long periods of time or sell things, although I did do some sporting goods sales when I was working my way through college. But I really had a passion for people. And I have to say, in all honesty, that passion wasn't always directed towards their spiritual needs, but self-improvement, their physical abilities, their mental abilities. It was through a process of God working through my life that and placing me in job opportunities with various people that really brought around a heart for their salvation. And with my interest in sports medicine, there's a perfect arena to work with people that were certainly hurting and in more than just a physical capacity. Like a lot of you, possibly, when I graduated from college, I had some ideas about what I wanted to do, but it seemed like the job market was so big and so vast, and there was so many things that I could do, it was very hard to really find what I wanted to do. I worked right out of college with several athletic conditioning facilities, health clubs, and that type of thing, as a consultant, and didn't really find that too gratifying. I felt like there was more that I could be doing with my professional skills. And so I went back to school, and I was a pre-med major. I wanted to go to medical school. My father was a doctor and had a tremendous ministry with his patients there. I wasn't sure in what capacity that I wanted to function as a physician, but I knew that that was better than what I was doing. During that time, I was employed with a physical therapist who was also a Christian that really showed me the tremendous opportunity to work with people, have a captive audience, although these patients could talk back, and so there was some good interaction that evolved from that. But I really realized that rather than going into medicine specifically, that physical therapy, with my background in athletics and my interest in medicine, would be the best avenue for me to pursue. And initially, I'd heard about physical therapy in college, and I never really pursued it because my mindset was such that I would be working in a hospital for the rest of my days, and not that that's bad, Jim. And then I would be doing things with bedpans and working with terminally ill patients and that type of thing. And I think there's a tremendous need for that, and there is a place in physical therapy, a type of physical therapy where that's done, and it's very important. But I wanted to be working with more medically stable patients, patients that I could personally relate to as far as athletic injuries and frustrations and concerns and just the whole psychological component to being able to do anything you want at one moment physically, and then having that all brought down in front of your eyes, a very humbling experience after that. And there's a lot of psychological and, as I learned to see later on, a very spiritual component to those injuries too. I I was 27 when I applied to physical therapy school, and when I was 28, I got accepted to the program at Children's Hospital here in Los Angeles, which was one of three schools that I had applied to on the West Coast. And graduated in 1985, and started working at the facility that I'm at now down in California, in Van Nuys. I was a staff therapist. I had every intention to go back up to Seattle and work with the therapist that I'd worked with initially. But the Lord worked in such a way that He provided opportunities for me to advance in a very short time to from a staff therapist to a senior therapist and to the chief therapist or the director of the facility in less than 4 years, which is a pretty fast progression for that type of thing. And I honestly believe it wasn't due totally to my manual skills, my clinical skills, but because God had a plan for me, and He had a purpose for putting me in that workplace. And it's important to realize that whatever ministry you're in, whatever you feel like your aptitude, or your, the world would call it an innate ability, I like to call it a spiritual giftedness, wherever that you find your desires leading you as far as things that you gravitate towards in the work field, realize that that is your ministry. You don't have to look outside that foreign ministry. There's certainly other things that you can involve yourself in, but it's a tremendous opportunity. It's really a waste of time if you're spending 8 or 10 hours in your workplace and not using that as a ministry or realizing that that is your ministry. God has placed you there for a purpose. He's gifted you towards that end, and it's the most fulfilling and rewarding thing that you can ever experience when you realize that that is where God would have you be, and you don't need any special training in seminary. I found that I wanted to take some Logos classes to really improve my understanding of different doctrine and theology and even the way that I communicated to the patients that I worked with, and that was a tremendous help. But God doesn't require that. He just requires you to be willing and to be available and really to be walking in the Spirit, to be obedient and have a relationship with Him that would be honoring to Him. I believe that's part of the reason that I was promoted as fast as I was, because there's a certain a character, a certain integrity in my life that was seen by the my employers that marked me as somewhat different than the rest of the people there that may have been there for their own purposes and their own gains and a financial reward. The field of physical therapy is really a wonderful and exciting field to be in. There's absolutely no unemployment in the field of physical therapy. You can go to any city in any state of the country and find work. Any therapist that is unemployed is by choice or by a career change, but it's exciting because it's a growing profession, and it's very diverse. You can work in acute care, where you might be working in a hospital. You might be working two floors away from where a gym would work, and be dealing with some of those patients that had a gunshot wound, and maybe are in the process of learning how to walk again, or if they'd had some kind of a head trauma because of a bullet wound, teaching them some different skills, working with other allied health professionals such as speech therapists and occupational therapists, teaching them how to use their restoring their functional abilities or maintaining those things or improving them. I work in an outpatient clinic, which means that the people that I see are medically stable. They basically walk in under their own power. But oftentimes, they, for the first time in their lives, they understand the frailty of their humanness, the fact that they don't have ultimate control over their lives, their physical being. A lot of the guys that are football players, when I was up in Seattle, I worked with every major sports team up there and all the top professional athletes there, as well as college and high school athletes. And now I'm working with mostly the high school and college athletes in the San Fernando Valley. But for the first time, they are faced with the fact that athletics isn't their life. There's more to it than that. There's a spiritual dimension that suddenly becomes real to them, as well as the emotional component. And it's what they're doing. And in athletics, sometimes that's not seen because it can be very cutthroat, vying for the top position and moving on. So seeing somebody that's come out of athletics that is generally concerned about how you're doing. You do have a captive audience. A lot of my patients I work with in private rooms, and for the 30 or 45 minutes that I work with them, it's a tremendous opportunity to get to know them. I see many patients for up to 6 or 9 months, and you can develop a tremendous rapport with them and find out about their lives, what's going on in their lives. You'll find in the workplace that your employer doesn't pay you to share the gospel, but there's oftentimes every opportunity to do that on a very personal level rather than a professional level. I've been able to distribute literature, have people over my home, have my wife minister in music to some people, which was interesting, sing for their weddings and that type of thing. But really, you get to deal with these people rather than isolating a particular part of their body, a knee or an ankle or a foot or a shoulder or a back condition, and look at them as a whole person and realize that their needs extend far beyond what they've come in to see you for on a physical basis. I believe God's put me in the position that I am as the director of that facility to create an environment that would be conducive not only to the patients that I work with, but to the staff I work with and the people that employ me. I've had a tremendous opportunity with a lot of people from Grace Church that are on staff there to provide a therapy for them and administer to their needs in that way. It's wonderful when you get to share with those of like precious faith, and they see too for the first time that oftentimes that there's a very temporal aspect to these this physical shell that we have as a body. The psalmist says that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, and that's true. It's every day it's evident to me that we represent our Creator, and to understand the complexities and intricacies of the body and the way it works and the way it functions, the way it dysfunctions, is tremendous. And it's a constant reminder to me daily of my God and my Creator. How are we doing for time? Are we okay? Sometimes I get excited about this stuff and I tend to go on, but it is exciting. To my knowledge, I haven't personally led anybody to the Lord at work, but I've seen tremendous changes in the lives of people that I've worked with. I've had people approach me about Christ, about Christianity, about the lifestyle, about the my value system, why I don't do certain things and why I do certain things. You make an impact. I wasn't aware of how much an impact was made by the nonverbal things that you do. If there's a joke that's being told and you maybe turn around and walk away, or you don't laugh, simple things, small things. I was embarrassed one time when I told a joke. It wasn't an off-color joke. It wasn't a dirty joke. But they were surprised, nevertheless, that I told a joke that maybe they didn't expect to come from me. And they said, "Boy, I didn't know that you told jokes like that." And I can't remember what the joke was, but I'm sure that I could tell it to you, and it would be okay. But I was impressed by the fact that they noticed that, and I had made an impression on their life just by the character that I tried to develop in my own life through biblical principles and precepts. So I'll encourage you, if you have interest at all in working with people, the two of the guys that shared, both are in a people-type profession, and it's tremendously rewarding to work in that capacity and be out in the workplace. And it's not always so fun to be rubbing shoulders with the world, but when you see the impression that you make, and how some are planting, some are watering, and watching God cause the increase. There's nothing like it when you realize that you're doing it for God, you're not doing it for yourself, and that you have the rest of the years that God gives you to work in that capacity. And it's a tremendous joy.
Thank you, all of you. Did you notice how excited they are about what they do? You notice how fulfilled they are about what they do, right? You can get excited about the career that God has for you if you're careful to follow His leading into the place that He has in mind for you. There's one other thing that was clear to me as each of the men spoke, and Felix and Jim and Ron, and that is the tremendous love that they have for their patients. Did you notice that? You can just see the love that they have, that the love of Christ constrains them, and the love of Christ flows through them to the patients that God brings to you. You know that everybody you see, the Lord is bringing to you, right? There are no accidents. God is sending them to you so that you can minister to them, not only physically, but even more importantly, spiritually. Okay, let's receive some questions. You may address a question to one of them, or to all of them, or to whoever would like to respond. Okay? Hands. Yes.
Do you ever run into any problems with your employer? I know I have, as far as being limited on sharing the faith on the job.
Me? Well, I have an office, and that creates a good opportunity to do that. I generally don't approach an employee about a spiritual problem. Usually it's a work problem, and if it's something that can be cleared up with just a short comment, then I'll do that. Sometimes it may be more involved than that, and we'll step into the office. And it really lends an opportunity to get to the heart of the problem. And all my staff is very open to all that I have to share. They know where I'm coming from. They know that I'm a Christian. They know I'm very involved in my church, and that I work with a lot of the people from my church. A lot of people come in from the church that I work with. I introduce them to my employees, and they talk sometimes. But there are guidelines, and I don't push my Christianity on them, but I certainly expose it to them, and I share in different capacities in different ways, and people that come from different backgrounds, from maybe a Catholic faith, or we don't have any Muslims that I work with, but they come from different mindsets in regard to religion, secular humanism, and that type of thing, which is pretty prevalent. But I don't really have any restrictions, because I let the Holy Spirit really set the atmosphere and speak through me as their spiritual need is perceived. And a lot of times they'll approach me on their own, just about questions that they have about world religions and Christianity and how it all fits in, and salvation, and what does the church say about this, I don't know what the church always says about it, but I have two Bibles that I can share with them from what the Word of God says about it, and they're always very receptive. I've never really had a problem with that, and the administration has never, ever, once said anything to me about what I share with my people.
Jim, what would your experience be?
Well, the first thing I do is I share with my employer, and he knows right where I'm coming from, right up front. With the staff, I really don't have any problem either, because there are no constraints on what you talk to your coworkers with. In fact, the fun there is getting them to want, to know about religion or to talk about it. And I'm constantly reading about Islam or Christianity or something, and so just by the nature of the books that I have, you can get conversations going. One of the doctors walked up and saw me reading a book by F.F. Bruce on the reliability of the New Testament, because I need to know about that when I talk to Muslims, because they don't, believe that the New Testament is accurate. And he looks at the title and says, "Are the New Testament documents reliable?" And he said, "Nah." So I says, "Huh? We have a little bit to talk about." And so he and I are, talking a little bit more every day, keeping the door open. In terms of patients, I'm limited in my particular job by what I can say, just by time and by amount of work. I literally run on my feet for 8 or 12 hours straight, and I often don't get a break in that time because I can be so busy. And you can share a little bit, about things when you're starting an IV. People are very attentive when you have a large needle in your hand. And so I think the most effective way I can utilize, you know, working there and dealing with my employer is I can get a door open without any trouble. And then I can pass the baton. Chaplain Phil Manley, for example, is at our medical center. He's from Grace, an elder there. And I can tell people, you know, that I really enjoyed talking to them and that I know they're going to be leaving now, but they'll be in the hospital for the next, you know, 3 months. And if they'd like to talk to someone, here's a real good guy to talk to. And I have little techniques like that work. So with the level of sharing I'm able to do with patients, I don't have any trouble with my employer. If I whipped out my four spiritual laws and started to go in depth with a bulletin board or something, chalkboard, I'd probably have trouble. But just, you know, the kind of low-level witnessing that I do with patients, there's no trouble.
One of the key reasons that these men don't have trouble is because they do their job really well. And when you do your job really well, you get away with being a Christian on the job. Felix has the ultimate answer, however, to the employment question, don't you? The employer question.
Well, everyone thinks, well, when you are your own boss, you don't have anybody to speak to answer to. But really, every patient's my boss. See, you could get them mad at you and you lose them. So, and sure enough, I mean, I know the Jehovah Witnesses, they don't come by at all. And you have to be sensitive to that. And it's not, you have to understand that in reality, I'm making a living too. So, you know, you're seeing patients and then you got to move on to the next one. So, but you're also getting to know the families and you're getting to know them. So, and you're developing relationships. And then somebody will come in whose father, you know, I had a patient this week, his father just died. So, and we have all the literature in the waiting room. So there's, books about, death. You know, if somebody dies, about healing, about, you know, all the different little pamphlets. So that, and they are there for people to take. And so people see these, and it's amazing how many times we have to refill those pamphlets, and people are picking them up and reading them. So, you know, we have that kind of control. But in the practice, we're developing relationships, and then there'll be a fellow that maybe you know, I got to ask I did the Kennedy method this week where I asked the fellow if he died today, would he know where, if he's going to heaven or hell. But, you know, he's been a patient for about 5 years and we finally got to that, see. So it's different for everyone. And you know what I mean? It varies with everyone. We get to know them and all of a sudden a need will come up that happens all the time, so.
So the importance of being careful to be discerning as to the leading of the Spirit, when to witness and when not to witness, is really the key, isn't it? Well, another question in the back.
Yes, I think my question probably specifically for Dr. Mark. You must do a lot of thinking, Doctor, about fee structuring and things like that. How does your Christian faith affect your fee structuring?
Oh. Well, you know, that varies. I'm probably the, on a lot of things, I'm the highest in town. And I just tell people, you know, they're not, see, there's different types of in dentistry, there's different types of dentistry. There's the Cadillac dentistry, and there's, and it just seems that people that are coming to me, there's an underground network that's out there, you don't even know about it. See, I don't get calls for, people don't even call to ask me if I take, except Medi-Cal, which I don't. So, you know, the word just gets out. You kind of get like people. And it's only because that's the kind of work that I do. I don't do some of the other kind of dentistry. And so as far as the fee structure goes, I just set mine based on what we're going to do, and I realize that they are high, but you know, we have to have the fees because of all the insurances. They kind of regulate that type of thing, but then on the individual basis, it varies with everyone. See, so then that's the practical part of it. We have a fee structure because we're kind of governed by the insurances, and they control that. And you can't be doing anything fraudulent. So, So, but with the individual, because it's my practice, I could discount it or whatever I want to anybody who I want. So, and when I see the needs come up, and you know, we see those come up every now and then. So, any other questions?
Other questions? Yes.
I get a lot of pressure in that area because my particular occupation, you know, is historically female. And I definitely have a lot of difficulties in a lot of areas that way. Many of the procedures that I have to do with women are very intimate, you know, due to the nature of the body. So I have to deal with those situations very frequently, and those can be very difficult at some time. The trick is to, you know, help your patient be at ease and to understand what you're going to do as a clinical technical procedure. There is a fair amount of discrimination I deal with at work because a lot of people feel that men cannot be nurses and cannot be effective nurses. And that's one of the little things that drives me to be even more excellent. And in fact, is because I know I'm always dealing with that, I'm striving to be the best nurse I can be. And it sounds kind of corny, but I really have to do that, and I really have to be that. Because if I slack off at all, you know, to, you know, even the normal level of the people I work with, it really affects my witness significantly. So I'm battling a couple of things on those lines. In fact, I was really honored yesterday. One of the female nurses came up to me and said, you know, that I was one of the two male nurses she's ever known that she's ever thought was a good bedside nurse. That the rest of them, you know, are all worthless. And she was speaking. I know her, and she wasn't just saying that to berate men. She just was not impressed with, you know, how they work. And I knew that that meant that I'm being effective in my goal, which is to be a servant. I've been offered staff positions, you know, at every hospital I've been in, or supervisory positions, and I've turned them all down. I have no desire whatsoever ever to be a supervisor. I want to be one thing and one thing only. I want to be a servant. And the best way I can do it is by being the best nurse I can be. And by doing that, I dispel most of the male-female problems that I have. But they are definitely there, and I feel them every day.
I don't know what angle you were coming at with that question, but for me, you know, you have to work with women. And to tell you the truth, this is one thing that experience does teach you. You learn some things. And if you believe like I believe, and you kind of want to teach this, that the woman's role is to raise her children and godly children and that type of thing, and then you hire a woman that has kids, aren't you being a hypocrite? Yeah. So I just outright don't hire any women that have kids. And of course, you know, you could get sued nowadays for everything, for asking any questions. But if I want to be consistent in my own thinking on that area, I just don't do that. So I just hire a single girl, and she's the receptionist. And I've weeded my practice down to, you know, over the philosophy has changed for me over my 12 years or 13 years of practice. I used to think bigger was better, but I found that smaller is better, and I just have a small operation now. And I've turned people down because of that, and they don't like it too much. So that's how I handle that. And the other thing is you have to work with women. Fortunately, these young girls that I get, they seem to all get married right away, and that's kind of nice. I kind of like them turning over because I just know too many friends that have gotten in trouble because you're with your secretary more than you're with your own wife sometimes. And you could just see how that could lead to a potential problem, and even as Christians. So that's an area we always have to be careful with and just constantly on guard. And you're just always doing your best to avoid anything that could possibly lead to a misunderstanding or or could lead to anything more serious, you know. So it's just one of those things that I'm on guard. I don't know if that's what you were asking, but because you're working with another lady there, you have to be on guard all the time, I think.
Was that question in regard to our employees or our patients? Was that question in regard to our employees or our patients? The ladies that we work with? Okay. I haven't really had a problem with that too much. I've got four women that work with me as therapists, and I have three other guys, and then I got all the front office and billing people that are all women. I enjoy working with the women. They provide a complement to the male mindset, certainly. Physical therapy was historically a profession that was dominated by women. In fact, in most physical therapy programs that you look at, you'll find that it's probably a 2-to-1, maybe even a 3-to-1 ratio now between the female students and the male students. But is this in regard to women in the workplace? That type of thing? Okay. All except one of the women that work for me as therapists are married, and there's a woman that works for me that's an athletic trainer, and she's not married either. My personal feeling is that it's great to have them working there. I think it's great. Even the ones that are married, the ones that have kids, or that are, I have two women that are pregnant that are working for me. I don't discourage them from coming back to work, but I certainly don't encourage it. In fact, just yesterday we had a discussion about women in the workplace and raising kids and that type of thing. I'm a new father of 6 months, and my wife hasn't had to go back to work. We kind of plan it that way. She still does some singing engagements and some studio things, but they asked me about that, and I tell them that it's I wouldn't do it any other way. I would sell everything I owned and live in whatever capacity I had to, so that my wife wouldn't have to go back to work, because it's such a compromise on the values that you try and establish in the home. And that certainly carries over into your attitude and your outlook at work. And she comes in and visits me at work maybe 2 or 3 times a week, and brings our son, and he's a big hit. I like to show him off. He's pretty advanced for his age. He can do some things that normally wouldn't be integrated for maybe a few more months, so I like to show him off to the other therapist, and I think that's pretty special. I tell him it's because my wife stays home with him and teaches him those things, which isn't true, but I think that that they respect that. They respect our lifestyle and the fact that my wife doesn't have to come into work, and it's not a chauvinistic thing. It's just more of a biblical mandate, really. And I've talked to a couple of the women that have been working for 3 or 4 years with me, and I've encouraged them to stay home, and I mean, I haven't told them to do that, but I've encouraged them to stay home and do that, because they're really open with me, and they share with me some of the concerns they have about being torn between being a housekeeper and a wife, and just being involved in other activities that they want to do. And I encourage them to do that. If they want to work part time, that's fine. I let them work part time. But the women that are moms, I really I talk about having their babysitters and their daycares, and the type of values that are being instilled, and I ask them if they're concerned about that. I don't really tell them that much. I mostly ask them questions about that. They're questions that have a purpose to them, and try and stimulate some thought as to, you know, if it's really all worth it. I understand too that there's people that we're both husband and wife have to work, but I certainly am not opposed to women before having children working. I don't see anything wrong with that at all.
treatment for heart fields in college. You've obviously made it through. What advice do you have for pre-med, pre-dent, and science majors?
Well, you know, the you're talking about the creation and the... You mean the discipline?
Start early.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, I, you know, for me, I just had that single-mindedness just to do it. And that's what kept me going. Plus the fact that, you know what happened was when I was in college at SC, I noticed my friends were changing majors every semester. I just couldn't get over that. I thought it was too expensive to be going there to fool around, you know. So I finished my requirements the first 2 years, really, and then nobody would accept me in 2 years, so I had to go another year just to show they just didn't feel right letting a guy in 2 years when there were people 4 and 5 years applying. So I went another year, but the... I think the secret there was, and you've heard John McCarthy say this many times, is just to sit down and do it. Fortunately, I had jobs and I didn't have any spare time. See, I had a job at night from 6 to 1 in the morning, and I lived in Pasadena, so that was a hour commute to SC. And you know, the little time that I had, I only had time to do one thing, was study. So I did it and got it over with. But as far as that, I don't know if you're referring to the issue of, you know, creation and all that kind of things. I was too dumb back then. I just did the work, and I didn't know about some of the things I know about now, how to defend our position. And back then, I kind of took that halfway road, which I believe was wrong at the time. I believe that was a wrong road where I thought I could combine them both. But I just didn't have the right information at that point, and we do now, so... there's a lot of things to help you out today where you can just take your stand with God's word first. So,
thank you. And I think what we'd like to do now, for those of you who need to go to class, we're going to excuse you, but we'll remind you that you may sign up in the back for opportunities in small groups this afternoon with these men. And those of you who would like to stay for a few more minutes, we can take some more questions here for a few minutes if you're able and would like to do that. There's some questions that I would like to ask of these folks as well that we will do here. But before that, those of you who need to leave, please feel free to leave now and have a good weekend.
I've done that. In fact, just yesterday, you know, I had to make one of those decisions, you know, on the radio. In fact, it's kind of embarrassing. There are two radios. There's one that's a private channel between me and the paramedics, and there's one that every hospital in L.A. Orange and San Bernardino County listens to. And this was on that one. So every hospital is listening to me make this call, and it's like, I don't want to make a mistake. And there's a guy with a heart problem, and, you know, he was right on the border whether he needed a drug or not. If you give the drug, it can make the heart worse, but it can also save his life, literally, because he might be going down. I opted to be conservative and not do it. I was very nervous when I made that decision. I was sweating bullets by the time I was done, and I went and I pulled the doctor aside and said, how would you have handled this one? And they said exactly the same thing, and it was the right decision. But you get nervous doing that. It gets better with experience. Because I've been an RN since 81, so I've been doing this for quite a while. But you always come across unique situations in emergency medicine. People get themselves into the most incredible situations. And so you get those. And you just learn to deal with it by, you know, following certain basic principles. You're taught to, you know, follow a patient a certain way, and you just let the care develop itself. So it's scary, but you just do it.
Our science department.
Oh, I'm at UCLA right now.
Reader.
Once a month.
Once a month.
So, get down there. It's a good break for me. Keeps you up. You know, in dentistry, unfortunately, a lot of the stuff you do in the back teeth and things, nobody appreciates it, you know. So I take pictures and things, and when I go over there and show a bunch of dentists, and then they all say, oh, that's beautiful. And then, you know, that gives me my little strokes that get me through another month, you know. So you need that, you know, you kind of need your peers to say, oh, that's a good job.
I went to Children's Hospital. It's becoming increasingly more difficult, I have to say, and that's because of the number of people that are applying to therapy as a viable option to other health professions. There's been a lot more exposure to it with the diversity in the field now, sports medicine and the emphasis in that area, working with teams and professional athletes and stuff, is probably really exploded in the last 10 years or so. And you hear about different athletes and their therapists doing this form and that form and this type of thing. So it's getting a lot more exposure, and people are considering that a lot more, which is good for the profession. The unfortunate thing is that there's probably fewer schools now than there were 10 years ago. And there's legislation pending right now that would require by 1990, which is next year, for all the schools to be a master's entry level. I think Northridge still has a bachelor's program. At Children's now, they've changed their curriculum the year after I... It was a graduate level program. It was a master's level program. They weren't affiliated with a degree granting institution, and so they could just give you a graduate certificate. Now they're affiliated with Chapman College, and in the class that graduated after I did receive their master's degree through Chapman College and Children's Hospital. But the requirements are a little bit more stringent now that it is gearing up towards a master's entry level. Most of the programs that will probably be in existence will be changed to a master's entry level. It provides a little bit more credibility for the profession, a little bit higher level of training, allows for more research to be done within the profession that wouldn't ordinarily be done. So it is a little bit tougher. They're also requiring a lot more volunteer work prior to getting into the program. So with at the time you submit your application, they generally look to see if you've had any experience or involvement in the field of physical therapy, which may be more commonplace with a lot of the health sciences, just to have people be more aware of what it's really like. And I wish I would have had more diverse exposure to the field. I was just exposed to orthopedic rehabilitation, sports rehabilitation, which is pretty much what I wanted to go into anyway. I mean, that's really down my alley. But you can work with head trauma and spinal cord injury and diabetics. You can work in pediatrics, geriatrics, sports medicine, home health, a variety of different things. I mean, you can do anything you want to do. Private practice allows you to treat just ankles or just knees or just shoulder problems or hands. Occupational therapy pretty much does a lot of the hand therapy, but... because of the diversity, it's a lot more appealing to people. If it hadn't diversified, I don't know that I would have been that interested in it necessarily. Maybe after I got into it, I would have seen some of the possibilities. But it is getting more competitive. The year I applied in 84, I believe. Well, I applied in 83 and 84. Very few people, probably 10% of the people that apply their first time get in to the program the first time they apply. I got in the second time that I applied. There were 400 applicants. 90 of those 400 applicants were selected to come down and interview at Children's Hospital. And of those 90, they took 24 students with four alternates. So it's very competitive. You don't have to have a 4-point, but that it helps the closer you are. But they want to see. Basically, what they look for when they look at your resume, your recommendations are basically your discipline with your academics, which would be indicated by your grade point. That doesn't mean you're going to be less appropriate for that field, but it's a screening process. They look at your character qualities through your recommendations, and then on a personal interview, they just basically see how you handle yourself, how you answer questions, your confidence, your aptitude to some degree, just how you present yourself, and if you would be a good candidate to represent the profession of physical therapy.
Not so much. I mean, there are certain prerequisites that you have to have, and I know business majors that have, along with their business, minored in say, health science, kinesiology, or chemistry, or biology, or microbiology, or something like that, zoology, something that would be a related field. It's pretty tough to do it that way. I didn't know until I was out of college that I was going to go into physical therapy. I knew I wanted to work in the health professions. My first 2 years were in as a physical education major, and then I changed that to health sciences, and I wanted to go into exercise physiology and work with corporate fitness at that level. But most of those people were PhDs and masters, and it was kind of a closing down on the need for people in that capacity. And so I knew I had to get into something else, so I wanted to try medicine, just not specialize in orthopedics per se, but just general practice with an emphasis in sports medicine. But you can have your major be just about anything, but it's advisable to have some of those prerequisite classes working towards your undergraduate degree for the different programs. It's a 2-year curriculum. Actually, my curriculum is only 16.5 months. I was the last graduating class that had a 16.5 month curriculum, and that's because it was a graduate level class, so all the prerequisite classes, the foundational work was done undergraduate, and we didn't have to complete our master's project. We had to take it to the point of having a proposal done and have it ready to initiate, but because they couldn't give us a master's degree, we didn't have to follow that out. That was with a certificate class. They don't have any more certificate programs anymore. We were the last class nationwide to get that, and then they all went to it. Now, they're still pretty much 2-year programs. You have to have your bachelor's now, yeah. I think a few schools like Northridge is still, and Cal State Long Beach still have programs that will offer you a bachelor's degree, but I think this could be the last year that you'll see that, and everybody's changing their curriculums. And I think the ones that don't, you won't see have a program anymore. It's kind of scary, you know. It's a lot harder to get in. But that makes me a lot more marketable, so I'm glad I'm through it. Pretty much means that you're committed to that profession. Yeah. There's a lot of people that, when I was applying, there's a lot of people that were maybe applying to medical school or dental school or chiropractic or whatever, and didn't get in the first year they applied, and so they would apply to physical therapy as something to do maybe in the interim while they're still applying to medical school. And then when they got into medical school, they drop out of the program, and there's a problem with that, because a lot of people that were really interested in pursuing that as a profession were getting bumped by people that had a higher GPA, maybe more experience, because they were applying for medical school, and they really wanted to screen that. They were really careful about that. So,
what is the first thing that comes to mind, each one of you, as advice to people who are considering a career in healthcare one way or another?
Well, I think you need to first prayerfully consider that and really have to have a passion for people. You really have to want to work with people, because you'll be working with them day in and day out, whether it's your staff or your patients. You have to have a general interest in healthcare too. But I think having a passion for people, being willing to work hard, because there's more than just the problem that they come in with. There can be some emotional conflicts, there can be some personality conflicts. You really have to demonstrate the love of Christ and respond in love when there's those types of conflicts. I wish I would have been better prepared for that. I've been around people all my life, in the medical community all my life, but just the actual working with the people and the varied personalities, socioeconomic backgrounds, those kinds of things that present themselves. You have to, can't always understand what's going on in their life, but you can be understanding. I was thinking 1 Peter 3:7, where it encourages husbands to live with their wives in an understanding way. That doesn't mean that we're always going to understand the mind of the woman, but we can be understanding. You know, I think that's real important. You work in the health profession. You can work in teaching. You can work in research, or you can work in clinically in the health field, the health professions. And in each one of those arenas, there's an opportunity to be working with people in different capacities. But you have to have a passion for those people. And when you understand that those people are lost, and you know how they can be saved, and you can share the good news with them, it's exciting, because I mean, every day you know that there's going to be a new opportunity. Every day there's going to be an opportunity to share. But I think the passion for people is probably
passion
most important.
For people. Felix, what about the importance of their academic graduation of the colleges? What he was saying earlier, I'm not sure he fully understood. What he said was, you know, a dental program often two, three years under graduate school and then the dental school. And what he's saying is he finished the 3 years in 2 years, but they wouldn't let him in because they said you ought to have 3 years.
A minimum. They wanted everybody with a B.A.
Even though he had finished it. He'd finished the course material. But
yeah, all the requirements. Now, I'm just trying to remember what it was like in college. But I think from your point of view, see, all we could think about back then was getting in. So the thing I have to say to you is, you know, we have to remember God's providence. Is God in control or not? But that doesn't mean that we're not going to do our best. We're going to work hard and do everything we can do to go in. But things are so competitive now. You know, this patient of mine, this young fellow, he got in because he was an alternate. And enough people canceled out at UCLA that he finally got in. And when he took his test the other day, the second quarter, I think he was in the top three of his class, in the medical school class. I mean, he was a good, strong kid, and he just squeaked in because a couple of people got out. You know, probably they got accepted at their first choice. They probably sent in their money that they were going to UCLA. And then when Harvard accepted them, they leave, you know. So then they'd get the alternates in, see, that's how the alternates get in. So, but, you know, the thing that's assuring to us as Christians, we know God's providence, that He's in control and He's running things. So, but that doesn't mean we don't do our part. We just need to work as hard as we can. You know, when I was on the admissions board, everybody said the same thing. It was so boring to read those things. They said, well, I'm good with my hands, and I think I'd be a good dentist, and I like people. You know, they all said that same thing. And if we saw an application that said something different, you know, that stood out, and we could give them a little more attention. But you have to kind of remember those things when you're filling those out.
Get that written down. If you're thinking of dental school, don't say you're good with your hands. And your left.
I mean, that comes in handy, but, you know. That.
I would also encourage you to get involved if you can in some aspect of that profession you want to go to, especially just simple volunteer work. That's how I got into it. Nursing in particular is a very demanding profession. It's nothing like they show you on TV. And it's great to volunteer and to help out nurses and see whatever job you're interested in. You can volunteer and help in physical therapy in a hospital, you know, or anything. And you can get a chance to see what the job is, find out what it is. My program, we started with 56 people and we graduated 26. You know, a lot of people dropped out because they said, I don't want to do this. You know, I mean, this is work. You know, so definitely find out and make sure that, you know, it's what you want to do. Don't just get in love, you know, with the name of a job, you know, of a position, but find out what it is and make sure you want to do it. Because you're talking a long time if you commit your career to it.
Good. Any other questions? Anything that you fellows have in your mind that you haven't had a chance to say that you'd like to quote on?
I think this is a tremendous opportunity. I know that, when I was in high school and even in college, I felt like I was being a little bit more directed towards something in the health profession, but I didn't have a clue. I'll tell you what, the only people that came to my high school, they came to my college with people in the military, you know, the Army, the you know, Air Force, Marines, and so on. I'm not saying that's not a viable arena for, you know, to share Christ in, but, boy, it didn't help me. Well, I considered it, I guess, But I didn't, when I left high school, I didn't know, I had a fairly good grade point. It was, I think about a 3.38, something like that. I didn't have a clue. I didn't know I was going to go to college or get a job or go in the military or what I was going to do. And I got an athletic scholarship, and I went to a junior college for 2 years just to try it out. And both my older sisters had gone through college, and my parents were professional people. They'd all both been through college, and my mom was a nurse, and my dad was a physician, and so I knew all about, you know, what the what it entailed. But I just didn't know. I didn't have a clue. I didn't have any direction. And I think it's a tremendous opportunity when you that the college can offer something like this. And I wish I would have had it available to me when I was going through. And just to get an idea of what's involved in a health profession and what the opportunities are available as a Christian to take advantage of. I don't know about the rest of these guys, but I was, you know. And when I got through college, I still didn't know. I mean, I had some ideas, a little bit more direct. I knew that I wasn't going to be an accountant. But, I mean, health sciences is pretty broad. And you do need to spend that time volunteering and being around there and talking to people that you respect that are in various professions, you know, even if it's not something that you may have initially considered. But just get an idea and then prayerfully wait on the Lord to show you. You know, you may get an application from some medical school in the mail that's saying you've been pre-approved, like you get some of these credit cards. So all you have to do is fill it out and they accept you into the program. But I haven't seen that happen yet.
Yeah, please.
Reality.
Yeah. Well, I would think in terms of studying in school, the Lord tends to put people in college to study. You know, that's the primary function of this 4 years. And the quality of your studies and your attitude towards it is an offering to the Lord. You know, just being at a Christian college, you know, won't boost your relationship. You know, excellence is what counts. And, you know, it will necessarily take away from other aspects of your life. You know, your social life, you might not be able to go out as much if you have a major organic exam. I remember organic chemistry. And so, you know, it will detract from some other areas. But you're going to learn as soon as you get out of college that your relationship to the Lord needs to be independent in some, you know, of the time that you put into work and studies. In other words, just because you leave college and now you're only working 8 hours, your relationship with the Lord doesn't change and it's only get better because now you're devoting time to work and now you have more time for this. Your relationship with the Lord is constant. No matter what you do, you know, everything you do needs to be an offering to the Lord all the time. And I don't want any comments from my wife in the back. It is entirely possible I work a little too much at this point. But we have another kid coming, and we have a single-income family because we're trying to do things the old-fashioned way that you're supposed to. And so, you know, I'm putting a little overtime in right now, and that does affect things, too. We were talking about that last night, and I'm going to be putting in a lot less time coming up because we're due any day for our second kid. I need to be with my family. And when I'm away at work, that can definitely affect me, you know, quite a bit. And, you know, it's hard. You know, in my profession, it's constant giving. There is no, almost no receiving in a county hospital. You know, somebody said thank you for something last week. You know, it was amazing. You know, but you know, there's very little of that. I've learned a whole new vocabulary there. You know, it's a very stressful place, and so that can affect me if I'm around that continually. You know, every day, all the time. So you do have those problems, and so you need to find a balance between your work, quiet time with the Lord, time with your family, and it's a juggling act, and it doesn't get any easier when you leave college. That college is probably the easiest time because you can really schedule things, you know, very accurately.
It gets worse, and then it's even worse if you like your work,
mm-hmm.
because you know you could literally, I could spend, I'm already there, 6 to 6, so I could even be there longer, but I have to cut back. Now, but getting to your question there, I mean, you have to work, but if we could just change our emphasis, you know, the thing that I could look back now and say, you know, I wish, see, if we related to God's work and that type of thing, see, now when I'm studying Greek on my own,
I'm saying to myself, boy, had I known that English was that important, see, we can almost see how everything ties into getting back to God's Word and studying about Him and knowing Him more, you know. So, but I didn't realize that, see. If my motivation would have been right then, if somebody would have told me, now the reason we're studying English is because someday you want to understand God's Word a little better. And it's important to understand what a predicate is and all that thing that we laughed at. See, I didn't see that. That was important, you know. And now I just wish I wish I had learned better, see. But really, you could do that for biology, see, because you're going to be dealing with biologists in real life. And for your organic chemistry, we want to see God's hand in that also. And so that's why we're motivated. We have a new motivation now to learn it for God's glory, see. And it kind of changes your attitude's different. You know, you can get into it a little more. See, it's a little more exciting, even the boring stuff. And I remember organic.
I'd like to comment on that, too. I think what's really important, though, is looking again at why you're pursuing that major. And if you feel that, you know, it's the Spirit of God leading you in that direction, then you really need to go for it. Whatever it costs, you got to do that, or you're going to be sorry later on. You know, and you've got to study a little more. One of the reasons may be because you've got a little more direction right now than some of your roommates do. You know, they don't have as clear a direction as to what the Lord may want them to be doing with their lives, and they aren't going to have the same level of motivation. And so, therefore, would be maybe selecting some things that aren't quite as hard. But you can do it. If you really believe that the Lord may be leading you in that direction, you not only can do it, you really have to do it, or you can't live with yourself, right? You're going to have to keep going for it, and before you know it, it'll be over. But don't do something crazy like I did. I didn't start really to listen to the Lord until I was 35, and so off I went to seminary with a wife and three kids and had to work full-time while I went to seminary full-time for 3 years. Now, that's horrible. But even that you can do if that's what the Lord wants you to do. He will enable you. You won't get much sleep, or you won't have any relaxation at all. All you will do is study and spend some time with your family a little bit, and that's it. So don't do that. And one more question.
I want to respond to just a little bit different perspective there. I think that everything that these guys have said is true, and I agree with everything they've said. But you're only going to go through this time in your life once, and I think it's very important to take advantage of all that's available to you here, on, especially a campus like this. I went to Seattle Pacific University, which is a Christian campus. It was, anyway. But I enjoyed college. I loved college, and I could have studied more, and I didn't. I studied, maybe I shouldn't be saying this, I could have studied more, I could have studied harder, but as an athlete I could have trained harder too, and you realize that sometimes you get to a point of diminishing returns where you've overtrained and your performance is somewhat less than it could be, and the same is true with studying, I think, that you just have to determine for your own self what is really necessary for you to understand the material. Now, I didn't mess around when I went to class. I was tuned in fully for the entire length of the class. And I had some 70-minute classes that it was very difficult. But I felt that the more attention I paid in class, the better I'd understand the reading and wouldn't have to labor through some of the other material that might have been part of the outside reading assignments. Got an early start on the projects for the class so that I wasn't starting them a week before midterms or a week before finals, and just kind of pulling it all together, and it allowed me a lot more time to enjoy the social aspect of college, which was great. I mean, I had a lot of fun. I went to a lot of the athletic events that I didn't participate in and supported that and did intramurals and got involved in Bible studies and all kinds of things. And I didn't really sweat it. I mean, I'm not saying that I was a natural student, because I certainly could have done better, but college was well balanced for me. It wasn't just studying. You'll never be involved in anything like that ever again. I mean, college is pretty much a one-time thing. When you graduate and you go on to maybe some professional training, that'll be a little bit the same, but it's a little bit more focused. Things seem to be pulling together and making a little bit more sense.
when you take your prerequisite classes for your bachelor's degree, you can't really understand how it all fits in together and what you want to do in a health science. You know, the microbiology and the organic chemistry and some of the physics that you take. Those kinds of things that you just labor through, and you maybe recognize your importance in the total scheme of things. You can't really understand how they specifically apply. And I quite honestly can't remember a lot of the stuff that I learned from my undergraduate stuff. But I know that it was foundational for me to understand some of the other stuff that I learned in my professional training. And I could go back and look at it again, and it makes better sense to me now than when I studied it the first time through, because I can see how it's specifically applied. But I would just encourage you to enjoy your time here. Enjoy your professors. Enjoy your classmates. And enjoy all that's available to you here on the campus. But do be disciplined when you do set aside that time to study, that you make it a profitable time, just like when you're in the Word. You don't want to just skim through it for the sake of skimming through a chapter or a book, or when you go to prayer, if you do set aside a specific time to pray, if you're not, talking to the Lord all the time, I did. I mean, I was, people that I was talking to myself, but it's important to maybe provide that kind of structure for you, but also allow time for the other things. You need time for you too. Otherwise, you'll burn out. You'll stay up late at night. Your health will be compromised, and so might your ability to do well on a test, just because you just feel like you're just so single-minded towards, A's aren't the most important things. I was pretty much a B student. I got A's and B's. And I hope that doesn't mean that you all of a sudden start compromising on what you've set aside for yourself as a standard. But recognize that there's other things going on too. And if you spend so much time with your books devoted to that, you may be missing the needs of some of your classmates or roommates, or some of the other things that can be enjoyed while you're going through this once in a lifetime time. I mean, you're only this age once.
I spread my college out over 10 years, so once in life wasn't a problem.
Well, thank you so much, man. It's just been wonderful, hasn't it, to have this here. Let's close in a word of prayer. Let's just thank the Lord. Our God and Father, we're so thankful for this time. We're thankful that Ron and Jim and Felix would be able to make this time available to us. And Lord, we pray for every student and faculty person, as they will be a part of this, that which we have learned today we would be good stewards of, that we would apply to our lives in a way that would help us glorify you more. And we pray for these men, that you would continue to bless them in all that they do, help them be faithful, help them be effective, and bless their families. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. We need to go get something to eat.